podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is the Anfield Wrap. It's Neil Atkinson, joined by the marvellous Ian Ryan, the indefatigable Amelia Bonner, and the big man himself, the glorious...
defeated Rob Gutman.
An old man Gutman.
Don't make it worse. Let's leave the adjectives at defeated.
You're defeated and depressed.
Yes. I'm right on the edge, Neil. Right on the edge of wondering what it's all about.
What is it all about, Rob?
It wasn't about watching Liverpool lose again and again. I couldn't remove from my head as I walked out of the ground the fact we've now lost to the two worst teams in the division. Near as damn it, away from home and at home. Mm-hmm. We've completed being shit. It was just as low. I kept thinking, maybe even losing to Northampton or Wolves at home under Roy Hodgson wasn't quite as devastating as this. This is just as low as I can remember feeling as a Liverpool fan. And yet, I definitely don't want the manager sacked. And I've said that in drink before, once famously.
Famously.
It made the national news when I said that. That's the problem is I don't know. I have no remedies, no nothing other than putting a pillow over my head and sort of lying in bed for days on end. So that's what I might do.
It's an option. Ian Ryan, it is about Liverpool. What it is, Leeds United 2. What's driving me to distraction? To distraction is the endless gifts. The extent to which Liverpool make it so easy to, not even at times, to play football against them, because I think Leeds United actually struggled to play a bit of football against Liverpool at times. Second half, they only attempted about 145 passes and only achieved about 85 of them. It's that they're very easy to play a game against. They're bad at games, Liverpool. It's not necessarily that they're bad at football, though I think they were that as well at times yesterday, but they're just bad at games, and I'm sick of watching them be bad at games.
It's a season of gifts, Neil, isn't it, really, when you think about it? I mean, yesterday, you can't be surprised. I mean, you should be beating Leeds United at home. That should be a given. You should be beating Nottingham Forest away. But where we are right now, we don't look capable of being able to put a series of decent results together. And this is the current version of this Liverpool team. They might have one or two good performances, one or two good results, but then it almost certainly defaults back to defeats because they are so inconsistent. The gifts thing is something we've talked about all season. I mean, they try their best to go behind against Ajax, to be fair. They try their best. And then obviously, you know, the game settles down and they take it away from Ajax. But they do in that game start really poorly. The proof's in the pudding, you know, they've gone behind 12 out of the last 16 games. That is unacceptable. That is absolutely unacceptable. Doesn't matter what level of football you're playing at, you cannot be giving an opponent a head start like that in more games than you're not. And it's getting to the point now where people are scratching their heads and listen, we've all got our theories on why it's gone wrong. And I think it's a number of things. I don't think it's just one thing, although I think certain things are more kind of prominent than others. But it does look now that there needs to be a massive reset. The World Cup, you can't wait for it. You just can't fucking wait for the World Cup because you'd stop it right now if you could, but they've got another couple of games or another couple of what you would say now are tricky games. You know, Spurs on the horizon could be a difficult one. And even Southampton, I mean, that shouldn't be a difficult one, but you're looking at that and thinking now, you know, Liverpool could drop points.
My point to that, Ian, would be that Southampton are looking at that going, we can get something. Also that's in the spirit of Leeds United as well. Leeds United looked at yesterday and thought, we can get something. They get to half time and they go, we can get something. They get to 60 minutes and they're going, we can get something out of this. And that's what really is driving me mad. It's the encouragement, it's the gift, it's the encouragement.
Hope. You're giving them hope because Leeds United and Nottingham Forest, I mean, if you're an elite level football team, you should be licking your lips at those two games and thinking, right, there's no other outcome other than 6 points across these two games. And you kind of lay a marker down early doors. Leeds are on a really, really poor run. They haven't won since August. So if you go ahead early, the way they are with their manager at the minute, although what I will say is the players are still fighting for them. The fans may not like him, but the players are still fighting for him. You see that both during the game and after the game. But you can't take hope away from Leeds United very early on. If you play a sensible game, your normal game, you hit the levels that you expect of this Liverpool team, they could crumble and it could have been another 3 or 4 or 5, but we're a million miles away from that at the minute.
I think that's what I was struck by from Leeds yesterday is that, like, there's a need from both sides to deliver a result for different reasons. But for Leeds, that need is a catalyst for, like, intensity, for determination, for fighting, for being absolutely in the game. And for us, it just absolutely isn't. Like, there's such a need there for us as well for that to have been a result, to not have lost to the two worst teams in the league back to back. But for Leeds, that need became a catalyst. And for us, that need is just kind of still, it's still just there. It's still just hanging in the air. And I think that the gifts are, I think if you're being completely generous, if you're being ridiculously generous, you can say that the first goal, the Gomez pass is an error, but you don't get punished for it if Alisson doesn't slip and it's a bit like flap of a butterfly's wing that maybe it doesn't go that way. The second one is completely fucking inexcusable. And you can't, you're right, you can't concede again. What is it, 4 minutes in? You can't keep doing it. It's absolutely obscene.
On that, Amelia, for me, what you talked there about, you know, Leeds United playing with urgency and all that sort of stuff. Liverpool played with urgency for 10 minutes between going 1-0 down and making it 1-1. Mm-hmm. For me, you know, if you really want to get into what's inexcusable, it's the extent to which they get off Leeds' back. They've absolutely dominated them for the 10 minutes leading up to the equaliser. They pen them in, they'll be moving the ball this way and that. Leeds can't live with it. And then Liverpool go, tell you what, lads, have a go for half an hour now, eh? Let's not worry about it too much.
Yeah, absolutely. And, like, I know we talked a lot about what you might want to put that down to. I think they're all incredibly tired. And I know we'll get down to kind of, like, we'll break it apart piece by piece, talking about the midfield, the defence, the attackers. But I think, like, if you're looking at that midfield, it's a midfield that either has young lads who aren't there yet or players who don't have it anymore. That capacity, they just don't have it in their legs. It's just not there, that intensity. And what Leeds are bringing there, it just is completely lacking in a crucial area of that Liverpool game last night. There's a reason that Darwin Nunes, it feels like he doesn't really get anywhere near the ball very much, and that's because it's not being delivered to him. It's not his fault. And I think that that intensity just wasn't there from us anywhere on the pitch, but in the midfield especially.
We score on 14, Rob. Mm. We then don't have another shot until 39. In that period of time, Leeds have five attempts.
Yeah.
And as I say, it makes no sense. When the equaliser comes, the equaliser was coming. If you know what I mean, like, it was very much, we're going to score in a minute, bang, we score. And one of the things that's marked out, Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool, and I'm going right the way back to, for example, Manchester City away, when he's been in the job for about 2 months, is that when that Liverpool side, that one, the one that goes to Chelsea and wins 3-1, the one that goes to Manchester City and wins 4-1, when that team got a foothold, when that team was on top in a game, it doubled down.
Yeah.
It didn't let the opponents up. When it was winning, it did not let the opponents up. When things were going its way, it made sure. Now, there was terrible performances in that period as well, don't get me wrong. But what there wasn't was an oscillation at times, massive oscillation within games, and that's what we're seeing.
Yeah, that's why even then, although there was inconsistency, you knew that greatness was possibly coming, because in the fallow years, the biggest problem in watching Liverpool, and the fallow years, you know, are not that fallow, at times they're quite exciting, obviously, the 30 years I'm talking about. But in that period, an ongoing frustration was a Liverpool team that went 1-0 up couldn't be trusted to go 2-0 up. And you'd watch Man United enviously. That was the main team we'd watch by comparison. You'd see them go 1-0 up and they go 2-0 up within 2 minutes. City are like that now. But even when that team was a nascent Klopp team, as you cited in those games, 1-0 was quickly becoming 2-0, was becoming 3-0. There was a phase of ruthlessness. Obviously, that team could also let teams back into it. They'd settle at 3-0 and you'd have 3-3, like with Sevilla and the other examples. But that seems to have gone. It seems to have gone. Maybe I'm forgetting it happened the other night against Ajax. It literally happened. Sorry, Amelia.
Oh, no, just that ability to bully a team. Do you know what I mean? It felt like Leeds were bullying us last night for that point after the goal. But Liverpool used to be capable of bullying other teams into complete submission, and we can't do that anymore.
Yeah, all too rarely. It does remind me of the past, I suppose, because this feels like, is this the tail end of an era of greatness? So I start thinking back to the end of the early 90s, 1991, where there were still flickers of a Liverpool playing devastating football. It's in the culture we all remember of, around that era, that we beat Derby, I think 6 or 7-1 away, whilst being shit generally around it. But there were still games, and the Bournemouth is maybe like that, or a 5 minutes here, a 10 minutes there. And the malaise is too ingrained. We're defaulting not to quality. You know, the City results is the outlier. Playing well in Ajax is the outlier. We're defaulting to shite now, so that you do have to say, this could be the end of this phase, this team's era. Well, let's put it this way. If I can just indulge me for a few more seconds. If I compare it to the 80s, there were actually several eras within that. By 1984, 85, the golden age of 76... through to 83 was gone. It had finished, and it had to be rebuilt, and it sort of pinnacles with the 88 team, and it survives till 90. So this can be rebuilt. We're not rebuilding. If we are starting a rebuild now, we do need to start having that conversation that it isn't from a total scratch. Dalglish was able to rebuild a Liverpool team and still have Alan Hansen in the background. You know, he was still able
Steve
to
Steve Nicol, Ronnie Whelan.
Exactly, right? Okay, he then cultured that team, recultivated that team with the likes of Barnes and Beers, and it became an exciting, different thing. But there is a core here he can work from, but I do think there is some savagery needed in terms of the pruning. But that's a bigger conversation maybe for another day.
Well, I mean, it'll be one for during the World Cup possibly, but we'll perhaps come back around to it now in a few minutes. But Ian, it is the lack of urgency that drives me mad. And because they managed to shift from first they conceded the daft goal, showing urgency, making it 1-1. It drifts away from them through the rest of the first half, and then they come out second half, and very quickly, without actually going through a period of urgency, I think they actually hit a peak of desperation, if you know what I mean. It's not like they're ratcheting it up, it just sort of manages to flit from, we're not doing much in the game, we're absolutely desperate to make something happen now. And again, for me, they feel as though they've lost their ability to pace a match in the way that that's what, you know, good winning sides do, is the even when they're not playing well, they pace a match. They fail to do it against Forest. They fail to do it against Leeds. They actually do a good job of it against Manchester City. They've lost that, though, in terms of the regularity of the way you pace through a game.
Yeah, I think they're a really difficult team to analyse at the minute, because when you are capable of putting in the performance they did against Manchester City, you then struggle to understand how they can go from that to kind of the performances against the likes of Nottingham Forest and the performance against Leeds, because against City, everyone's pretty much to a man is on it, and the concentration levels are really, really high. And I think at times the concentration levels have not been anywhere near the kind of level you would expect, and people are switching off when they shouldn't. And obviously the thing around, you know, them being tired mentally and physically, I think you can apply that to different players within the team. You know, some of them do look tired physically, but I still think a lot of them are just tired mentally. I think, you know, going to the well again and again and coming so close on a number of occasions is probably mentally exhausted, one or two. But the thing is, you know, when you talk about the physical tiredness and the managing the games, you shouldn't be physically tired in the first 5 or 10 minutes of a game. You know, these are elite professionals. You should be able to start the match at a certain tempo, and then you maybe see it drift off towards the last 10 or 15 if you can't rotate. But Liverpool are starting matches unbelievably bad, and that's where I'm left scratching my head a little bit. Yeah. They're almost coming out with a completely kind of wrong attitude, and they're getting, you know, they're on the end of a kind of, you know, first 10 or the first 20 that sees them going behind in games. It then becomes difficult. But against Leeds, Neil, you're right, they get back on track. And what's kind of really, I don't know, I'm struggling with, you know, at half-time against Nottingham Forest and against Leeds, you're expecting to see something a little bit different. Yeah. You know, they come out with a different kind of verve and a different attitude, and you can't kind of, you know, they get stuck into the opponents and they take the game away from them, but you're not seeing that. And that's maybe where some of the physical tiredness comes in towards the end of games. But it is a real head-scratcher at the minute, because you can't just really put your finger on one thing. I just think it's a multitude of things. And yes, you know, the lack of investment, it absolutely is a thing, and I refuse to believe, you know, they haven't been hampered by not doing more at certain times when they've had opportunity to. But it isn't just that. You know, that Liverpool team against Leeds should be capable of beating and putting Leeds United to bed. That is a fact. They just should be. And somewhere, somehow, it just isn't happening. And I do think there's something in the fact that one or two will also start to feel pretty sorry for themselves. Now, when you see that opportunity of a league title going again so early on, I think mentally that will have hit one or two hard, where they know there's probably not loads of opportunities to get more league titles or European Cups. And when you see it almost just drift away
After the way last season ended.
And then all of a sudden, from a mental point of view, you suddenly see those results go against you and you think, fucking hell, how do we pick ourselves up now? Because it doesn't matter what we do, we're not going to catch Manchester City. And I know they are top at the minute, but they haven't been top. We're not going to catch them. And I think it becomes very difficult for some of those players to almost galvanise themselves to go again. But guess what? You're going to fucking have to, because you've got to get back in the Champions League. So we can't be sitting here feeling sorry for ourselves and going, well, that season's gone. They've got to get back in that big cup next year. So at some point, and it'll, you know, it'll come down to the manager and the backroom team and all that, but on the players as well, some of these senior pros, they're going to have to get them back to putting in performances that are 8, 9 and 10 out of 10. No, this cannot go on for much longer.
That inability to start, I think, is the thing that gives me the greatest cause for concern, because I think there's other bits that you can explain away or that you can try and find reasons for, whether it be injuries, whether it be tiredness, mental or physical, whether it be, like, I don't know, square pegs and round holes, whatever you want to put it down to. But I think that that inability to just start games, other than the City game, which felt like they started it as if it was a cup game and it started 100% aggressively, like, it was phenomenal. Other than that, and if we're kind of taking all European Cup games as being a something else, like just different to what we're talking about in the league, I think that I can't think of an answer. There's no explanation I can give as to why we are unable to start games well. And I think what is the most frustrating about last night is that, I think he said it on the post-match show, that like there's bits where Liverpool are really good. And I think that's the most frustrating thing. As we were walking back to the car, Steve was saying to me, I've seen Liverpool teams who are shitter than this play better, and the most frustrating thing is that this team is capable still of doing it, and we're watching them week after week after week just not deliver it. And I think that's the worst part, is that they do still have the capacity to deliver it, and that's why I don't have answers, essentially.
Whilst I agree we have been slow starters this season, and we set the pace with Fulham at the beginning of the season, which was the most maddening Liverpool performance I think I've seen in the modern era, because we just do not start. We did actually start yesterday. The problem is that we gave away a comedy goal, which was a freakish goal early on, but we'd gone at them for the 3 minutes before that, and we went at them straight after. You can say we were galvanised. The problem is how we reacted. It's just that it's this fragile mentality. We couldn't get over the fact that we'd scored, and the fact that Leeds decided, hang on, rather than fear, we're going to double down and counter Liverpool. There was no response. There was no mental strength there. We have been mentality midgets this season. You know, I know that's glibly been said before, but we have been. We're just not showing any character or mental strength. I don't know whether it's tiredness or. And too many players are now spent, and that does happen. And, you know, I've seen in the past, I was talking to my Danny yesterday. I don't know why it came up about, actually, I don't want to refer to an old Liverpool player because I actually know him, so I won't refer to him. But I remember there's one or two in the great era who actually were past their best far, far too young. And I don't know what it was, but it can happen. And we look around the pitch and we can look at a Fabinho here or I don't know who else there, but people who aren't yet 30 and go, oh, they've obviously still got years left. Maybe they haven't got years left as Liverpool players. Maybe there's too many of them just haven't. You know, we could go through this, decide who those lads are, but I have some fears.
The manager, pre-match, Ian, is saying he's going to make a team and play a system he may not like. Firstly, I could do without that because I like the sort of football Jurgen Klopp likes and what I saw at Ajax up until when they went ahead, but even, you know, after then, and what we got to see yesterday. We can talk about square pegs and round holes, but you've got to have some fucking pegs because there are fucking holes. And for me, basically deciding to play nobody on the left other than Andy Robertson is inexplicable. Henderson just about makes it work at Ajax with his engine. Thiago can't make it work. And that's not a criticism. He can't literally run any faster. He's running as fast as he can. And the number of times when there's a point where Robertson picks it up, goes past three, looks up and goes, lads.
Yeah.
And there's no one. I think Robertson actually plays well. I think he's one of the few who genuinely plays well. This fixing it from the bench game by game goes against everything we've seen for 5 years from the manager. We have a way of playing. We have our way. We commit to it wholeheartedly. We don't mess about. That, that is a concern for me. It's a massive concern now. When everyone has a bit of a crush on 4-4-2 or 4-2-4, it gets more attacking players on the pitch. I just don't want to see... I want to stop seeing Liverpool teams lose the fucking battles. Yeah. And part of that is the system. They're all having arguments every time the ball goes dead. Yeah. They're all having a chat about you're meant to be there and you're meant to be there and you're meant to be there. Every goal kick, it absolutely drives me mad. Lads, we've got a way of playing. Can we play our way of playing, please?
Yeah, I think... Listen, you know, Rob said before about the manager, and there is no, in my opinion, there is no conversation about the manager's future.
Absolutely not.
Because he is 100% the right person.
He's our guy.
To drive this forward and fix it. There's no doubt in my mind, absolutely no doubt in my mind, he is the main person for this job. But what I would say is he's not having a particularly great time. And I asked you on a show recently, what would you give him out of 10? And you said 5. And that's probably... about right.
I'm revising it down after Forrest and Leeds.
what are you giving him now? Three?
I'd give him about a three at the minute. Yeah, and I think he'd give himself about a three. Just like his song being sung at the minute, you know?
Yeah.
He's almost like he's going, he's fucking crap, you know?
I want to see that song packed in.
He's never really been a fan of that kind of adulation anyway, to be fair to him. But I think he is getting things wrong, both kind of in terms of selection, but also when he's having to make subs.
I think he can see there's a problem and he's trying to fix it. But my point is that I think it's not that they're not trying, but if anything, they're too busy.
Yeah.
It's too much for me all the time. You can't have a situation where the lads are on the pitch working out how they're playing while they're on the pitch. And it's not just one game. They've now played a very similar system in Ajax and they came back to do it here, but they're still having the same arguments and discussions about who's meant to be where and when.
Well, last night, Thiago he's a wonderful footballer. He's a brilliant kind of, you know, technician on the ball, all that kind of stuff, you know, to kind of quote Brendan Rodgers. He is brilliant, but he's not the lad who's got the engine to kind of shuttle across left-hand side on a constant basis. He said himself not that long ago, and he was kind of half-joking, but he says, you know, since I come to Liverpool, I've learned to run, because that's never been his game. He's never been that kind of player. Now, Henderson is more that player, but you've also got to recognise that Henderson's not getting any younger. Where Liverpool have landed, and this is the point about...
And he's right-footed.
And there's that as well. And I felt massively kind of sorry for Robertson last night, because he's brilliant at times in the game.
Yeah.
But second half, he's got no fucking chance. He's trying to beat two or three men because there literally is nobody to give it to. But where Liverpool have landed here, they've landed with a group of players in the midfield that none of them, and I mean fucking none of them, for different reasons, are capable of playing three games in a week. No. None of them are. Thiago can't do it, Fabinho can't do it, and Henderson can't do it. And they're your main three. They're your go-to guys. They've been as go-to guys. None of them can play three games in a week.
No.
Guess what? You've got to play three games in a week when you're going on all fronts. And of this season, of all seasons, the first part of this season, we all knew you had to play three games in a week. They're now relying on people like Harvey Elliott. He has a bad night last night. He has a bad night. But I feel sorry for him, because he should not be having to play and be told you're going again. Again, it's a manager's decision. Now, he may look at his bench and go, well, I can't pick any of the others because they're not quite there physically yet. So I've had to pick him again. Maybe that's true. You know, you look at Firmino. Firmino shouldn't have been playing again last night, but he's almost had to go with him again.
Yeah. But I don't agree with this had to. This is what's driving me mad.
But this is the unknown, isn't it? So we don't know what the data science or the kind of medical team is saying about whether player X or player Y can go, I'm with you. I wouldn't have played Harvey Elliott last night. I just wouldn't have done.
But also, you know, to go through all the bits, but Harvey Elliott could play off the left. We've never seen it. Harvey Elliott could play off the left.
I don't think he should be playing again last night. I think he's had too much football.
No, I agree. Well, my point is, though, at the minute, that we're acting as though, and the manager is acting as though, like, every decision's out of his hands. Like, it was out of his hands at Nottingham Forest to not, for instance, play Henderson after Thiago drops out, to, for instance, not play Trent after Thiago drops out. He has to do this. He has to do this. I don't believe if this... He's got agency, Ian.
Yeah. Well, taking Trent off last night, for me, felt wild. It just felt a bit wild. I don't know why he did it. Now, you know, Trent's maybe not been in the greatest form this season, but if you're going to look for a guy who's maybe going to conjure something up in terms of creativity, he's your fucking man. He is your man. I know he's not had loads of assists this season, but he's still the one capable of putting a ball in like no other in the team, and he takes him off. That for me made no sense last night.
Just as an example, for instance, last night he can play 4-3-3. He could play Curtis Jones wide left in attack, which, by the way, we wouldn't like. It might not be nice to watch, but it'd be a peg in a fucking hole.
Yeah.
He could play three midfielders. He could play Curtis Jones wide left. He could play Nunez through the middle, and he could play Salah off the right. That's a team he could pick, which therefore rests him Elliott, rests for me, you know. He has them as options from the bench. What's driving me mad, and I don't like it when we do it either, is acting as though he hasn't got choices. Curtis Jones gets the game against Nottingham Forest, so he's got 90 in his legs.
Maybe that's why he can't go again.
But he's had a week. You know what I mean? He's had a week at that point. And then, but all of this is, you know, for me, it feels as though he's got in his own head now. You know, when he does the thing where he says, we almost had to get into 4-3-3 because they were all complacent with it. They weren't thinking it through properly anymore. They weren't listening to what we were saying. For me, now you can go back to it, lads, because Jesus, firstly, this isn't working, number one. But number two, also, I'd like to think they'll switch back into, we need to get back to what we know, because they're not enjoying what they don't know. They're all on each other's backs all game on what they don't know. And he's got choices. And
Neil, wouldn't he say just that the win over City, the two wins over Rangers, and the good hour against Ajax were all achieved with the system? It's not, is it more, it's just the mentality, and the personnel, quite frankly. I think that's what he'd point to more. I think what's being exposed, I think there's two things going on. As Ian said, the midfield issue. It was obvious to everybody that we were light coming into the season in midfield. And Klopp has glibly accepted that he was wrong about the sighting of the nine midfielders. It was patent bullshit at the time, based on the fact they couldn't get Tchouaméni and Bellingham in, so it was just a retrofit to keep people confident. And he's obviously went behind, he sort of alluded to the owners should have been a bit more risk-averse before the end of the window, et cetera, et cetera. But I think what's been exposed is since... we haven't been that short of those nine midfielders, by the way, the last 3 weeks, have we? We've only really been without Keita and Chamberlain coming back.
Yeah.
But what we have suddenly been denuded of, and we've never faced this before, is an attacking crisis, in as much as Diaz and Jota, two first-hate name on the team sheet level players, were playing two out of every three, in Diaz's case, three out of every three. Yeah. Are not now available, so we've got no proper changes from the bench. We're not able to devastate.
But he can have changes from the bench.
Oh, he could. I agree with that. So that's a different conversation. That in that you can still riddle it so that you can impact the game later on. But there were times even early in the season where Diaz was single-handedly dragging us into games.
Yeah.
Against Palace we're losing and going nowhere until he scores a world. I mean, I think against Arsenal we're going nowhere until he decides to run across the pitch and put one in for Nunes. A lot of the Klopp project relies on having world-class players, a lot of them on the pitch, and having selected them really well and just letting them do what they need to do well. And just suddenly, all of a sudden now, we're going into games with a midfield three where one's always a kid, a Carvalho here or an Elliot there, whether it's a midfield three or they're playing it in a forward sense. Thiago, as you said, he can't really run. He is a luxury player. I don't care what anyone says. When you get him on his day, there's nothing else on the planet in terms of watching. But there's lots of not Thiago days. I mean, he stopped talking bullshit as a fan base, by the way, about Thiago. Mm. I would have him in a two most days of the week, as long as he was fit. But we just don't have the horses for the courses at the moment. And we don't, is it an injury crisis? An injury crisis in the front. Our front line has always been so elite in world football. And once that's taken away, we suddenly look a very, very flat proposition. I'm going all over the show, but surgery is needed.
Though. I know, I'm just agreeing with all of just nodding along with what Rob is saying.
Tell me about things you agree with specifically. I don't want to hear them. I need it now.
No, I think I agree about the midfield being absolute dog shit last night. I think that my key thing is that in that I'm not getting on Elliot's back, and nor am I having a go at Curtis in spite of my better judgment, because I don't think it's either of their faults, that neither of them just look up to it. I felt bad for Harvey last night. I genuinely felt sorry for him, for loads of it. Just he didn't look like he should have been on the pitch. He didn't look like he wanted to be on the pitch, and I just felt absolutely awful for the lad. You can't be relying on those kids to pull up a team. As you say, Thiago, if you get him on his day, then great. But a lot of the time, it's not his day. So where they're either kind of past their best, but where they don't have it in them anymore. And the solution to that is to not put on kids who aren't there yet.
But I think that, for instance, the solution to getting more out of Thiago is don't ask him to be left-hand side of a diamond.
Yeah. Play him in a two.
Just don't ask him. Or play him in a midfield three. You know what I mean? You've got options. Mm. He's done the midfield three thing for much of last season next to Fabinho, and someone else goes and plays right-hand side. You know, the way to get the best, the way to get the best out of Thiago is not ask him to basically be Phil Coutinho 13-14 under Brendan Rodgers. He just wants to play his football and this is back to, are you actually getting the best out of some of these players? Are you making life harder or easier for them as the way in which you set the team up? Are they making it harder or easier for each other? And I feel like because we changed it once and we tweak it all the time, but because we made a big change once, Ian, I feel as though he feels as though he's just got to continually hold that hand crank now.
Yeah.
And I just think they could just do with knowing what they're meant to do for 90 minutes. And also they could do with having a support network in place in terms of when they're playing, so that when one thing goes wrong, the whole thing doesn't collapse in on itself, which is what happens arguably at 1-1, not a 2-1 or a 0-1, but at 1-1, after they go 1-1 until half-time. None of them know where they're meant to be. And it's really weird. They were great at all action. And then it's all of a sudden when the game becomes in inverted commas normal, they go rubbish. And that can't be the plan.
No, and listen, I'm not sitting here for one second and saying I like the system. Last night I didn't. I just think that the manager's, he's got himself into a situation now where he really is kind of, I think there's a real kind of balance issue within the team. And, Rob has alluded to it before, where it's either kind of, a certain kind of set of players, your Fabinhos, your Thiagos, your Hendersons, who are at a certain age, or you then kind of dropping down to kids, essentially. And I know Curtis is kind of about, what is he, 21, so maybe slightly older than Carvalho and Elliot, but he's still a young footballer. And Curtis Jones himself says before the game, he says, I'm not quite there yet in terms of my fitness levels. And that's maybe played into why Klopp's not thrust him in last night. And listen, when he comes on, he doesn't cover himself in glory. And I know it's different starting a game to maybe coming into a game and you're not playing well, but he's not great. And I think, you know, Liverpool have found themselves here with a massive issue around the age of that midfield, Neil. And we talked about it loads. You know, there just isn't those players who are kind of 23, 24. The ones who maybe are at the peak years are your Chamberlains and your Keiters, and they probably shouldn't be at the club. And I think that's where, you know, you're looking at, can Liverpool suddenly turn this round? I think we're a bit hamstrung here now till we get to maybe January and stuff. And we're going to have to just cough for the fact that we are going to have to do a bit of jiggery and pokery to try and get the most out of what we've currently got, because at the minute, it just feels like there's almost no perfect solution to this. And that missing the likes of Jota and Diaz is obviously a massive issue, but you are going to get injuries. And at the minute, you'd argue that they are one light top end of the pitch as well, but those lads aren't coming back till after Christmas. I know there's not loads of games now, but they're going to have to cop for it until January.
If they're playing 4-2-4 or something like that, the one light at the top end of the pitch, but then they don't start the season playing 4-2-4, but then they don't buy an attacking midfielder either, if that was the plan. You know, all the way through the summer, I was saying, if you're going to do this, you need another attacking midfielder. You need someone who plays when Elliot doesn't play. You've got to have that option. And they've chosen not to sort of go in and have a look for one of them, even from the noises that have come out. And this is, for me, this is therefore, why not go back to what everyone knows? Why not go back to the idea of, I'm happy to get loads of nils for a period here. I would be absolutely fine with loads and loads of nils. And if some of those nils are our nils as well, as long as it doesn't go the other way, like, that's the thing you base this on. And that's what I think they've lost. I think they're not robust at all. And I don't just mean they're not robust physically because of the age profile, etc. I don't think they're set up to be robust. And that's a massive concern, because what a lot of this was built on for a long period of time was you just don't mess with the best. And the best don't mess. And all of a sudden, at the minute, all we do is fucking mess. But I'm sick of it.
Can I go back to the age thing here? Because I think the high watermark of the Klopp era is winning the title. And I think the performance, that was the high watermark of the performance. I don't care what people say about last season, the quadruple. I don't think the performance level at its best was what it was in the title-winning season. Often enough, it was incredibly resolute, but the performance level was at its highest for me in the title season. And let's look at the age profile we have then. The mix is wonderful, if you think about it. You've got front three who are all about 27, heading for 28. You've got midfielders who probably, Fabinho around
about
the 25.
About 25 the profile
everybody is. Everybody is... 80%, 90% of that team is in the 25 to 28 range. They are peaking at the same time. And lo and behold, we win the bloody league. Go figure. Now there's this massive disparity. We're regularly putting a couple of 19-year-olds on the pitch, and there's a huge amount of them. How many past 30 that lined up last night? Well, there's Salah, Firmino, Henderson's on the pitch. Fabinho's virtually 30. Thiago's well seen 30. Milner's on the pitch for a great deal of time. Van Dijk, Robertson's not quite 30. But even the ones who aren't 30 are past that 26, 27, 28 sweet spot now. Yeah. You know, it's... The age profile, they've got this badly wrong, quite frankly.
Yeah. Well, they have got it wrong.
On that, though, what I will say is the two results last season away from winning a quadruple, at which point you go, well, you can't have it both ways. You can't be constantly coming into your prime.
But this would have still happened.
Well, no, exactly. My point is I agree with you, but then it becomes a conversation around, for instance, you can't have everyone, you can't build a world where everyone's contract lapses in the summer, just gone, and you fuck them all off, and then, you know what I mean? That's not how it works. Mm. And this is, but this...
Three
years ago, I was saying there's just not enough lads in this squad. It was between the age of 22 and 25.
Yeah.
And that's sort of what's come to pass. But then the flip side of that is that, as I say, the two results away from winning everything last season, they win the league. You know, you've got to remember here, we're dealing with a fan base who were furious they didn't buy anyone in the summer of 2019. Are still some of them furious that we didn't buy anyone in the summer of 2019, and we won 26 out of the first 27 fucking games.
Yeah.
And everyone acts as though there might not be a relation between those two things, and there very much is, because they decided to run with what they had. And this is where, you know, I've got a bit of sympathy. Yeah, but in the season after, this is where, you know, do they go and buy robust? Or do they buy luxury? Or what do they buy? And what's the why? So they buy Jota on the one hand. You know, but this is where it's... But you've got to be able to move people on is the next phase of this as well.
But that's it, Neil. And that's where they've not been... If you want to be critical, they've not been very good at moving people on in the right manner. So they've obviously... as you said, they come really, really close last year, but that's why everyone was crying out for reinforcements, because you could tell to play in a Klopp midfield, and Rob's right about the age profile, you probably have got to be that kind of 25, 26, maybe slightly younger, maybe going to 27. I think if you're going to have a load of lads who are kind of 28, 29, 30, 31, there's only so much you're going to get out of them, because he's asking so much of them. Yeah. And it's come to pass now where they all look a little bit frazzled and a little bit burnt out. And, you know, Liverpool have not, they've not operated, in my opinion, smartly in the transfer market for a while now. And I don't mean in terms of bringing players in, but if you're going to kind of ride the kind of tightrope that Liverpool do, where they can't maybe take as many risks as Man City. Mm. You've got to get a lot of it right, and where they're not getting it right, and that means, you know, being able to bring the money in, to be able to spend it, but then they're letting players go. The likes of Wijnaldum for nothing, the likes of Origi for nothing, even someone like Adam Lallana, who's now 34, but he leaves 2 years ago, goes for nothing. Yeah. There's a lot of players who are leaving the club for nothing, and they should be bringing money in to then be able to go and reinvest it. And I don't think they're quite getting it right from a transfer perspective, because we've also talked on shows where, would they go and buy an Andy Robertson now? You've said it yourself. Would they buy a Joel Matip? They've almost veered away from what got them to the table.
Yeah.
And at the same time, would they go down the list now and get a Mohamed Salah or a Sadio Mane like they used to do? Where actually, in certain instances, it feels like it's guy A or no one.
So, but on this, Ian, and this is where, again, in the big picture conversation, this is where I've got a little bit of sympathy. Part of why, for instance, they do what they do last season is there's a massive sense of togetherness at all levels of the squad. So part of why they have the season they have last season is the reason why no one wants to leave. You know, this idea of moving people on, they've got contracts. Yeah. And if they themselves, and then you've got a manager who's very much into, if you graft for me on the training pitch, he's never been a manager. He fucks a lot off in 2016 if he doesn't think I've got the right mentality or profile. It's an unbelievably ruthless summer. But he's not going to go and make someone train on their own if he wants rid. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. He's never going to be that guy. If you're one of ours, you're one of ours, you're all in. And that's one of the reasons why they all do leave for nothing, is that none of them want to leave. So what happens is they just don't get another deal. But at times, and this is all the way through this, why I think this is a hard conversation, is at times your greatest strength is your greatest weakness, if you know what I mean. And part of what he's fostered is such a sense of togetherness. No one wants to fucking go anywhere.
Yeah, I know.
And so within that, you end up in this situation where even footballers, you know, the rumours around a bit of a falling out with Keita, it's almost unique, if you know what I mean, since 2016.
Sadio decided
he wanted to go, and Liverpool go and cash in, and they get the money in for him. And, you know, that's an example of it. But then apart from that, who wants to go?
Sadio wants to go again, not because of any level of disharmony, but purely because what else do you achieve? Do you know what I mean? Like, what else can he achieve here? And he's in a way that, like, Divock Origi perhaps does not. Do you know what I mean? He doesn't go, well, I may have something else to, I don't know. I think that you're right, that it's become the school where none of the kids want to leave to go on to high school, but like perhaps they do have to at some point.
That's when they've been a little bit too loyal, though, haven't they? And I take your point, Neil, I understand, but if you are operating a model where to go and spend, you're relying on bringing money in, you can't let it get to that stage. But people like Keita and Chamberlain, and I don't want to dig them out because, you know, they have been part of something. But at the end of the day, it blows my mind that they're still at the club. It blows my mind that they're still here. And Liverpool haven't picked the sweet spot. Again, it's about doing things right from a transfer perspective to get those lads out the club, to be able to go and reinvest. They've not done that. Someone's massively at fault for not doing that, in my opinion. We shouldn't have got to this stage now where, actually, they probably both leave for free. That can't be right. Bobby Firmino probably leaves for free. Something fundamentally behind the scenes isn't going to plan where that happens. When you rely on bringing money in to go and spend it and invest in the playing squad, you've got to be getting that slightly better than what they are, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, this is a genuine question to everyone, really. Wonder what the season looks like had we got the elite. I mean, I think we should have got the elite midfielder we're crying out for now at least 18 months ago, right? Mm. I don't know who is that. Let's imagine it's Bellingham or someone we hope we would get that profile. Maybe that. I think if we bought one or two over the course of the last 18 months, we might have had one. We go, he's our best midfielder now. And that's what we needed. We needed a new best midfielder, and that project should really have begun. I think they had a project. They looked at Tchouaméni and Bellingham. But what they didn't do is factor in if that didn't happen. But if we had one of those guys in from the start of this season, guys good enough to bed in quickly, like a Diaz did do in a forward position, or like Salah has done, or Van Dijk or what have you, someone good enough that, what does this season look like? And this is a genuine question. How many more points we'd have had on the board? Would we have had that many more points on the board? I mean, obviously,
one win on the first day of the season because you've got a better midfielder, begats another win. You know, there's a sort of ripple in a pond effect. But I do think we needed three. We needed from about 6 months ago three best players. Our best new players, best players peaked two, three years ago. Now,
what the players wanted it. Van Dijk came out and said we need more midfielders. Look at the effect Diaz has on the squad.
Yeah.
When he comes in, he gives everyone a lift. The fan base gets a lift. The players around them get a lift. That's also part of what you get when you bring in additional quality.
We've been a bit unlucky with Nunes, I suppose. But then again, he scored the odd goal. But again, he's a project as well as being a potential superstar. So they couldn't
And that's your question, is whether or not you want... So what you're asking is, you bring another one in. There's no.
I bring two in.
Let's say you do two at the start of the season. Your hypothetical London universe. Bus, I mean, first and foremost, one of them gets injured day three because it's Liverpool.
Yeah.
But also, in the context of that, what the manager might sit here and say, or they might sit here and say, is we've already got one project. We're already trying to reshape what we're about. We don't want to do that now. My thing is, if you're going to play with an attacking midfielder, you need more than one of them. So go and get another one of them for certain. And I don't think it needs to be a great player. I think part of the problem is there's become this idea that it's either someone absolutely brilliant or not.
It can be Ginny Wijnaldum at the level he was at when we bought him.
Yeah,
so perfectly good enough.
And that's the...
Two of them, though.
But that remains the sort of... But I don't think that's just even in a midfield context either. And I think if you're going to try and play with four attacking players, you need to have one more attacking player.
Yeah. Well, do you know,
and you can get him, so you can go and get another one of them as well. And then from there, but that player doesn't need to be an absolute world beater. It arguably just needs to be someone who occupies a wide area, ideally the fucking left, who's got some pace about him.
But I think it's Paul Gorst at the Echo in the summer actually said, when we were all talking about midfielders and only midfielders, he said, you know what, I'd definitely at least also buy a winger. And I think he said a left winger as well. And I think, I've got a mental... Ismail Assar, say, let's just pick a name out of it. And we don't know if Ismail Assar is going to be the real deal in the long term or not. But it would have been nice. I think half the problem last night, it was exemplified, is we do not have enough wide, pacey attackers. And our whole success has been built on two whippets down the wings who went from being just a bit of pace down the wings to being world class. We brought in Diaz and we've lost Mane. But God knows we need another one of those kind of players. And it doesn't have to be the best one in the world. I remember once in a derby, Klopp was short and he just put Origi on to run down the wing because he could run quite fast down the wing with a bit of pace and power. And we don't even have that option at the moment because we're buying jinky number 10s like Carvalho and Elliot and bringing through Curtis. And,
we'd have been better off last night with Origi to play left wing.
Yeah,
100%.
Play 4-3-3 with Origi left wing.
And we brought in Minamino and so on. You know, we're buying too many of these little technicians, quite frankly. Let's bring through one. I think Harvey Elliott will bucket. What he's doing at the moment at this age suggests he could be a fantastic footballer. But there's a little too many in that mould who are getting their game at the moment. And they're the wrong pegs in the wrong holes.
Stop being fucking little.
Well, do you know what? No, I'm not even the littlestness because our legendary front three are a fairly small young
men. They were all lads who could play number nine. They were all able to use the body. They could stick. No. They were all physically imposing.
Let a boy fill out.
It's fine. I'm fine with Elliot and give Elliot time to fill out. Well, I think your point is what I'm sick of is I want loads of fast, hard fellas. Big, fast, hard fellas, please.
And Grox
in midfield. That's my profile. And Grox in midfield.
Yeah, me too.
And I want basically to watch Liverpool dog football matches. Yeah. When everyone wants Liverpool to go and buy an attacking midfielder, you know, get a creative player in, go and buy Kev De Bruyne. There's only one Kev De Bruyne. I'd have him.
Yeah.
Not least because he's also a fucking fast unit.
Yeah,
that's the other reason why I'd have big Kev.
That's why I want Bellingham or Gerrard too.
Because he's big
too,
Kev.
Or, yeah.
But the point is, that, you know, the first thing you've got to do is win the right.
Yeah,
and you've got to win the right, and you've got to physically impose. And Liverpool at the minute are not capable; they're just not capable of it. And that's what I'm finding hardest to watch is not being physically imposing.
We've got a genuine 19-year-old Coutinho.
And just a final thing on the kind of the player A thing. We used to all sit around this table and go, "Well, he's a decent player, but wait till Klopp gets hold of him; he'll turn him into something else." We used to always say that, and we've kind of massively moved away from it. And I think the point before I was making was, you know, you've got to get some of this right in terms of releasing players at the right time, the sweet spot of getting that right, so they're not in that last year and you get the money in for them, and then maybe you're not as fixated on this player A that has to come in. And as I say, yes, it works with Van Dijk, Kanati to a lesser extent, although that's Allison. A bit of a high wire act where, you know, it could have gone wrong if they don't get Champions League and stuff, but he's a very, very good footballer. But actually, you know, they weren't doing that previously. They had a list and they were going down it, and they were happy to go down it because they backed the manager to fucking get it right when they got him through the door. And when Klopp talks about maybe taking more risks. Maybe that's what he's talking about. He wasn't talking about that in his first kind of 2 or 3 years. He's brought it up recently where I think he thinks, well, maybe we could take a chance on player X or player Y. And guess what? I'll back myself to get the very best out of them. But at the minute, that midfield, and it is the fucking heart of the team, and it's a massive area where Klopp relies on that set of lads to do so much. It's so fucking imbalanced at the minute. And that's why, for me, you're getting a lot of this up and down in terms of results, because you can't play the same fellas every week. You just can't, because of the makeup of the squad. And then you're having to throw a young player in it here and there. They're having to learn it. You're having to tweak it to accommodate X, Y, and Z.
Beginning of January, who are we buying? Wilfried Zaha and which midfield?
I'd take Ismaïla Sarr. I think he's, you know, in terms of...
I'd take anybody who sounded like had an R.
We'll do a gutter straight after this, honestly.
It's
we should do a transfer show called The Award-Winning Gutter. We'd make you subscribe. I'd subscribe to that overnight.
Fucking sign me up.
All right. There was more unpleasantness off the pitch yesterday from the Leeds United supporters, but there was also some unpleasantness around where you were as well, Amelia, in the ground. We're going to have a very, very brief chat about that now. It was... Go on, I'll leave it with you.
Yeah, no, I'll keep it dead brief. It was just in the first half, a fella sat directly behind me, used a racial slur very loudly, and everyone around him heard him say it. And I turned around and said, "What did you just say?" And didn't get a response and asked again, "What did you just say?" And he wouldn't cop to it. But I think, like, obviously the racial slur is horrific and was reported to a steward and then to police, and a fan was removed from the ground. But I think the thing that I found second most shocking after someone just feeling it was acceptable to say that word in public was that when I turned around to confront him about it, every single fella that was sat around him and sat around me put their head down, didn't make eye contact, didn't say anything and didn't support me in saying to him, that's not okay to say. And I think, like, a lot of positive work has been done around kicking racism out of football and around us trying to tackle that. And I think a lot of the time the issue is when we have those conversations, we don't think we're talking about a problem inside our own house. We think we're saying, like, yeah, another fan should sort that out. And don't get me wrong, it's obviously a minority. But if you hear that, if you hear anything of that nature in the ground, be the person to call it out if you feel comfortable enough to do so, because the silver lining of the whole thing is that it was handled incredibly well, incredibly professionally. The stewards were amazing. It was dealt with brilliantly. But also, don't be a bystander if you hear someone calling it out. Don't leave me being the only person there saying to someone it's not okay to say that. Be someone that goes, yeah, mate, that's not all right. Pack it in. Like, don't be a bystander or a witness to it. And I think... be willing to accept that we've got a bit of work to do within our own house as well.
It's important, that sort of thing. We did all the work around Rainbow Laces, which you might have seen online. Very, very pleased to do that. It's about diversity in football. Football belongs to everyone. It is not a space which should be exclusionary. Football is for absolutely everybody, and that matters. It matters a great deal. It is indeed one of the best things about it. I mean, it's not for me at the minute, but it is meant to be for absolutely everybody at all times, and let's always bear that in mind where we can, and let's support people as well. Let should basically be on Team Sound, please, as much as humanly possible. All right, then. We're going to have to play a game against Napoli. The makers were obliged. It is.
If you say the words "pick me a team for Napoli,"
I want you to pick me a team for Napoli where I get to wear the captain's armbands. That's the level I want the team for Napoli to be. I want a Napoli record win. That's my ideal, because effectively we've taken the opportunity to refresh. I think a few might get a run, Ian, in all seriousness, you know, around, you know, for instance, I would love to see what Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain looks like running on a football pitch. That'd be nice.
He can't play, can he? He's not on the squad.
Oh, of course. No, that one fucked off his right, Ian. Well done, Liverpool.
Nine midfielders we got.
We're not going to get to see that then.
Keita's not. I mean, I don't think he's fit enough anyway, but he couldn't have started either.
Keita at least makes sense because he's not fit enough. So, you know, they got that one right. They got the Chamberlain one wrong. I presume we're going to see some James Milner somewhere. We're going to see some Curtis Jones somewhere. I wouldn't be averse to seeing Bacevic somewhere in amongst all of this as well. Bacevic, okay. I wouldn't be averse to seeing him somewhere. I wouldn't be averse to seeing Konate somewhere. I think we're getting Shimakas, whether we like it or not. You might tell from my tone, I won't. Although, you know, we could just play left mid in a 4-4-2 if we want to do that as well. That's another option the manager turned down. Play the two fullbacks in front of each other if you're short of left footers. Anyway, you know, I'm going to let it go in a minute.
You know the rock bottom that we all keep thinking we've hit and we haven't? I think we can pick a team for that nadir to be on Tuesday, Wednesday night, whenever it is against Napoli, because it seems incredible to say that we need to keep our best players fresh for Tottenham, because I have no idea who they are anymore. But I probably can have a guess at half a dozen of them. So the team we're going to put out against Napoli is going to be a dog shit team. Sorry, no disrespect.
I'm fine with it.
It's a squad though, isn't it? So they're kind of, you know, they're limited a little bit. I mean, the Chamberlain thing, you know, until a week or so ago, I'd forgotten myself. He wasn't part of the squad and stuff. But I think someone like a Canate, Liverpool are missing him. So I think if you've got any kind of hope of playing him at Tottenham, he's got to be getting minutes.
Yeah.
Midweek, he's just got to be getting minutes midweek, and you don't really want to see, if he can help it, the likes of a Thiago and Henderson anywhere near the pitch against Napoli. In my opinion, with the Spurs game,
we want Fabinho playing through to the injury he'll inevitably get.
I don't think you want Fabinho either, but you know, Neil's just named there: Curtis Jones, James Milner, there's Batic as well.
He can Batic in midfield.
Yeah, Batic is in the squad, is he?
I'd pick 4-3-3. He's also under 18, so I think
it's fine.
I'd pick that three. That'd be my midfield three, as you've just sort of framed it there. I'd pick Carvalho up top. I wouldn't be averse to giving the big lad a run, because I think just keeping him playing, you know, getting him involved, getting him close to the goal. Yeah. I think Salah will want to play, because I think he'll have his eye on being Champions League top scorer. And so I think you can have the idea to maybe Salah for an hour and then pull him out, because I don't know who else he plays right hand side either. That's his other thing.
We could ask Elliot to go again.
I
don't want Salah injured. I mean, then we can all not bother to turn up at the moment. I mean, season looks like.
Firmino looks shot as well, so maybe you will ask him to go again, but it didn't look on the kind of.
I mean, Nunes had hamstring issues not so long ago as well. I mean, this is the problem. We've got some pretty injury prone lads who are being played. And Klopp has said this, that, you know, when you're in a negative injury cycle, it just gets worse, not better. That's just the way of it. I mean, you almost have to be bold and literally play the frigging kids and go, I don't care if we get beaten 4-0 at home by Napoli, because we need to win in the Premier League. I'd love to see us win in the Premier League. That'd be a thing.
I don't think he'll do that. I think there's a couple of reasons around that, but I don't think he'll do that. And that's, you know, part of why this is difficult. And also, I don't think they'll come first choice. I think they'll rest a few. They're going for Serie A. They've certainly won the group.
Yeah. They've sent tickets back, haven't they, as well?
Yeah, they've sent tickets back. I just think they're going to go.
Have they?
Yeah, they're just going to go, you know what? We'll just see. I think there's an occasion here to sort of end up having a thing where it's almost like a friendly.
Yeah.
And that's not a bad thing at the minute.
We shake on a 2-1 defeat, quite frankly.
That's not a bad thing at the minute. I never like getting beat at home. I mean, it was crap last night.
I think he might go stronger on the back of that. I think he'll want to try and get something in terms of, you know, a bit of momentum going into the Spurs game. I'm not saying I'd go stronger, but I think the manager, well, we've seen him do it before. He has picked up a stronger team in some of these games that we've classed as dead rubbers, and he's got a little bit more
fun. Can he play the lad who's turning up in the under-18s, Ben Doak? Could he play him?
I don't know.
Yeah, he's good, I fancy. And the Celtic kid, he's really quick as well.
Because he won't count as part of the
squad. I thought he'd be, but I think he might be all right. He'd be on a B-list or something as an under-18, and he can play off the right.
Cone Doherty, as he called the other kid, who's doing really well. Yeah. I mean, the one thing about... Jesus
Christ. Can we pick Chirivella? Where does Pedro Chirivella when you need him?
I have to say, though, if you want to actually forecast it rather than say what we want to see, I do tend to agree that the Klopp's MO after a defeat is not to just write off the next game. It is to try and get confidence and rhythm back. So I think he might go stronger than... I fear he'll go stronger.
I mean, you could pick a good team and still get turned over by Napoli, by the way, depending on what their lineup is. But I don't think he'll want to suffer another defeat on the bounce going into that Spurs game.
No, I don't think so.
They're amongst the best teams in Europe at the minute. They're a joy to watch. I mean, I wouldn't mind them coming strong, because I quite like to watch some of these lads.
Yeah.
Phil Blundell's got a theory the Georgian lad might be the best player currently playing. He's not seen live. So Phil wants to see him picked.
What an honour for the boy.
Yeah. You've seen, you know, like, we've seen Messi. Yeah. Without being sort of daft about it, you go down the list of, like, when they do the ranking of the players, which I always hate, but you can go quite low before you get to a player that you've not seen, if you know what I mean, in person. And he could be, Phil's theory is he could be the best one, and Phil's right about these things.
It is, isn't it?
Whether we like it or not, Mr. Phil is right about these things.
He is often right.
Yeah, he's annoyingly right. It is worth saying. He's also the man who's in charge of taking me home, as he demonstrated yet again skillfully last night. I don't know what I'm going to do when he moves. Anyway, that sort of feels like the Anfield rap. Fucking hell. Subscribe for more of this. Come and see
whatever you do.
Come and see us live. I'm talking about this game four times. I'm writing about it as well. Finished that in the crock last night just after having done karaoke. Literally did this. It was on my third. I was on my third to last sentence of the piece, and the fella went, and now to do Dignity by Deacon Blue. It's Neil. I put my phone in my my pocket.
Phenomenal.
Up I went, did that, came back, sat down, finished the piece, sent it to Josh. Poor Josh. Work until 1 a.m. after that. Subscribe. Come and see us live in Ireland. It would be a pleasure if you did so. Vote for us in the FSA Awards as the best fan media outlet. We're certainly the angriest, and right now I'm definitely the sweatiest. It's been Amelia Bonner, it's been Ian Ryan, it's been Rob Gutman, it's been me, Neil Atkinson. Jesus, Liverpool, come on. Sports Social Podcast Network.